Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book study. My name is Gina R., and I am a recovered compulsive overeater. Today is Wednesday, September 12, 2018. Today we are reading from the Big Book, and we are at page 110, second paragraph. Let's go back to husband number one, through five paragraphs ending, you want to be helpful rather than critical. Comments will be on all five paragraphs. Today's readers are the 12 Steps, Carolyn D., 12 Traditions, Nancy T. Our readers will be Robin P., Carrie S., and Pia S., and our newcomer greeter is Melanie C. The reference numbers for Tuesday, September 11th, the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting, 11,900. And Wednesday, September 12th, 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting, 11,907. The OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. OA's sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I will now ask Carolyn D. to read the 12 steps.
Good morning. Thank you. This is Carolyn D., recovering compulsive overeater from Rochester, New York. The 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. 1. We admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6. We're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7. Humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, we promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you.
Thank you, Carolyn D. I will now ask Nancy T. to read the 12 traditions.
Thank you. Good morning, everybody. Nancy T., recovered compulsive overeater in Lewiston, Idaho. The 12 traditions. 1. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2. For our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3. The only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4. Each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6. An OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you, and with that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Nancy T. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass. Then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speakers should be muted. Today, we resume our study of the Big Book on page 110, the second paragraph, which begins, let's go back to husband number 1, reading through 5 paragraphs ending, you want to be helpful rather than critical, and we will be commenting on all. I will ask Robin P. to begin reading.
Hi, this is Robin. May I be heard?
Yes.
Great, thank you. I'm Robin P. I'm a grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater in Los Angeles. Now let's go back to husband number 1. Oddly enough, he is often difficult to deal with. He enjoys drinking. It stirs his imagination. His friends feel closer over a highball. Perhaps you enjoy drinking with him yourself when he doesn't go too far. You've passed happy events together, chatting and drinking before your fire. Perhaps you both like parties, which would be dull without liquor. We've enjoyed such evenings ourselves. We had a good time. We know all about liquor as a social lubricant. Some, but not all of us, think it has its advantages when reasonably used. The first principle of success is that you should never be angry. Even though your husband becomes unbearable and you have to leave him temporarily, you should, if you can, go without rancor. Patience and good temper are most necessary. Our next thought is that you should never tell him what he must do about his drinking. If he gets the idea that you are a nag or a killjoy, your chance of accomplishing anything useful may be zero. He will use that as an excuse to drink more. He will tell you he's misunderstood. This may lead to lonely evenings for you. He may seek someone else to console him, not always another man. Be determined that your husband's drinking is not going to spoil your relationship with your children or your friends. They need your companionship and your help. It is possible to have a full and useful life, though your husband continues to drink. We know women who are unafraid, even happy under these conditions. Do not set your heart on reforming your husband. You may be unable to do so, no matter how hard you try. We know these suggestions are sometimes difficult to follow, but you will save many a heartbreak if you can succeed in observing them. Your husband may come to appreciate your reasonableness and patience. This may lay the groundwork for a friendly talk about his alcoholic problem. Try to have him bring up the subject himself. Be sure you're not critical during this discussion. Attempt instead to put yourself in his place. Let him see that you want to be helpful rather than critical. Well, wow. It seems like a tall order to me. So I grew up as an alcoholic kid, in an alcoholic family. And it's the family of alcoholism, is what I meant to say. And it was really hard not to say things. And I wasn't always successful about that. And I, was a practicing compulsive overeater for 11 years of marriage. And it wasn't, you know, I've been on both sides of the spectrum. And because I was bulimic at times and anorexic at times, you know, to me it's all the same. You know, it still was the ism, the I, self, me. And it still was the ick, you know. So that my husband got to deal with, and his mother was an alcoholic. So this was this recovery pattern that we both got to deal with. And, you know, I think it takes the patience of a saint to probably live with this and not say anything, you know, and to go live your life. I have met people who have just gone and lived their life and been happy, joyous, and free, no matter what. They've been able to really practice their Al-Anon program and really practice detachment with love. I think that that's a real miracle from God, and I think that takes working the steps to be able to do that. It's really a God, you know, sent from God to be able to live like that under those conditions, because they can get really rough. With a lot of violence, and my experience was there was a lot of violence and a lot of abuse in many ways. So it does create quite a hellacious home environment, you know. So now the miracle is that when people do, you know, I've heard that there's my business, God's business, and none of my business, and so. You know, other people are really none of my business. And so I just can carry the message and let go and trust that they have their own higher power. I'm not here to be theirs. And so that's helped me a lot with sponsoring people, and that's helped me a lot with living my own life. I've been recovered for almost 3 years now. And, you know, I had a miracle of, you know, I think that my husband did act like this a lot. And we got divorced. And a year and a half ago, he invited me to go to church with him for Christmas Eve, and I went and I heard God say, "Merry Christmas, this is my gift to both of you." And I said, "Huh?" And God said it again. And I had a miracle of recovery, because I'm in recovery, and now my husband's in recovery in another program, and we are happily together again for a year and a half. We've been together, and we're happily. I used to call him my ex-husband boyfriend, and now I call him my fiance. Thank you. And just to wrap up, and now I call him my fiance. So I think there's a lot of miracles that happen when people do follow these guidelines. So with that, I'll pass. Thank you. God bless everybody in your recovery.
Thank you, Robin P. Okay, the lines will now be open for those who want to share on these five paragraphs. Who would like to share? Press star
Jen
one to
A.
unmute. Gotcha, Jen.
Heidi L.
Gotcha, Heidi. Barbara. Did I hear Barbara?
Yes, Barbara E.
Oh, okay, you were quite faint. Thank you. Who else?
Kathleen O.
Gotcha.
Patty T.
Patty T. Okay. How about one more and we'll make it an even six?
Jana M.
Jana M. Okay. So we'll stop there. Here's the lineup: Jen A, Heidi L, Barbara E, Kathleen O, Patty T, Jana M. Jen A, please go ahead.
Good morning, Gina. Good to hear your voice. It's Jen A., recovered in Colorado, anorexic, bulimic, compulsive overeater. Thank you, God, that I'm not doing those things today. Let's see, two wives, right? This chapter is written to the wives, to my family members, to others. And I love how we're learning the principles right here, the principles of success, right, on the top of page 111. And I love that because it all starts with one, right? The first step, even though the addict in my life becomes unbearable, it's telling me that I have these principles in order to be successful. And I believe that what I'm reading and what I'm learning, because I'm learning this for the first time as we read it on the lines, is that all of these principles are talked about prior to the individual being recovered, if I'm correct. I don't know. That's what I'm reading. So it's telling me that I need to have patience and good temper to never be or get angry, right? Because I know that as an addict and as dating other addicts and as having other people in my lives who are addicts, is that I go from insanity, right? I go from totally insane to enabling people. And so it's telling me that I should not get angry. I should be patient and good tempered, which means that I shouldn't have those high highs and those low lows, right? And never tell him what he must do about his drinking. That's the second principle right here on the page, right? I'm not to tell others what to do. And I remember this in my family, you know, people would tell me what to do. Oh my gosh, you shouldn't eat that. Oh my gosh, you shouldn't do that. Oh my gosh, oh my gosh. And then when I got really, really skinny and anorexic, they were like, oh my gosh, you need to gain some weight. Like, there's nothing you can do to please anybody, right? So that was the story of my life. And down here in like the third paragraph, do not set my heart on reforming anyone, your husband, the other person. I have a kid right now who's 16, who's dabbling in marijuana and who's experimenting. He's a teenager. Doesn't mean he's an addict today, right? But I don't have to set my heart on reforming him, right? I just got to love him right where he's at. And so I think the biggest thing that I'm hearing from this Two Wives chapter, and that's really ringing true in my life today as an addict, with possibly having other addicts in my life, and not knowing what's going to happen in the future for me in relationships, is that God's teaching me in here is that I have to lean back, I have to listen, I have to love the person right where they're at, and then I got to let go and let God do the work, right? Because I can't do it for them. I can't enable people. I can't do it for sponsees. I can't do it for anybody in my life. So that's the big lesson for me here in this Two Wives. So I'm learning a lot more than I thought I was going to learn, but I'm really grateful for the instructions in the manual. And I'm excited just to keep reading and keep finding out more. And with that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Jen A. Heidi L., you're next, followed by Barbara E. Please go ahead, Heidi.
This is Heidi L., compulsive overeater in California. Thanks for the reading this morning. It brings up so much, and it's made me think of a lot of things because I'm, of course, a recovered addict myself and in a couple programs, not just this one. And then I was married to an addict. And so the first thing it makes me think of is when I used to read this passage and go to Al-Anon, I had so much shame around being a bad Al-Anon because I didn't want to live with his active addiction. He was in recovery when we married and relapsed on drugs and alcohol. And just the, you know, the insanity that brings about. And I ended up choosing to leave the marriage. I didn't want to live in a marriage with an active addict. And it gave me all kinds of compassion for the people that have lived with me through my addiction, going through that experience. And so it just, you know, it brings up a lot of things. But today, for me, you know, the two things that I struggle with, most things are at bay around my addictions, but the food. And this summer, I chose to go off medication, and I've had a really, really rough time with depression. And that's my illness, and it affects everyone else around me. And I'm just reminded that, you know, it's a God program. God has to give me the energy and the strength to deal with it, but I have to choose to show up and to treat my illnesses or to get treatment around my illnesses and remember that, you know, these things of depression, addiction, are hard for other people to understand, and it does affect them. And so it is my responsibility to own that I have an illness, that I need to have it treated. And thank God for this program. I don't think I would be alive today. And I've lost people in my family to those illnesses, to death in the last 4 years, two people. And so it's, you know, I'm just thankful every day that I'm still alive. And I'm glad you guys are here. And thank you for having this meeting and offering amazing support and walking us through the big book. Thanks. I'll pass.
Thank you so much, Heidi L. Barbara E., you're up next. You're going to be followed by Kathleen O. Barbara, please go ahead.
Thank you. Does this sound a little better now?
Excellent.
Oh, great. Thank you so much for your efforts and for the shares I've heard and the shares I'm going to hear shortly. This chapter reminds me of the carnage that my disease created within my family. And yes, I did look for food buddies, people who would binge with me. We did a lot of binging. And I was always resentful of people who said, it's too rich, or I'm too full to finish it. What was wrong with them anyway? I would resent them and then come home and eat everything in the refrigerator and then attack the pantry. It's so ironic because I do have a compulsive overeater living in my home, close to 400 pounds, our son. My daughter is obese too, but she's living off with her family, and I'm only concerned with our son. I remember many years ago, I went to a psychiatrist when my child was about 3. He's now 48. Because I was so concerned because of his volatility and what seemed to me to be an eating disorder. And the fact, of course, that we had to walk on eggshells when around him. The psychiatrist said to me, I think perhaps we should focus on you, Barbara, and your emotional issues and your visible eating disorder. I was so upset that I thought I might have issues that I never returned for a second visit. I was unwilling to see what was right in front of me. I had no happiness or joy. I could not control my compulsive overeating. I took no responsibility for my actions, no matter how trivial. I always had to have the last word. And when I went on a diet, pay and weigh diets, I looked down my nose at my family for eating. I said, you should be doing this, you should be doing this, until I stopped doing it and then anything went. I did nothing but isolate and feed the beast. The beast was my disease. I was emotionally stunted. Today, it's 2 decades later. I think I've grown up a bit. I know I'm happier and healthier now, and I don't point my finger at my son who is living with us. That's another story. I just live and let live. No one could tell me what to do. I certainly can't tell him what to do. I eat my program. I weigh and measure. I think before I put anything into my mouth that might be toxic to me, and I just trust the process. Thank you. I pass.
Thank you, Barbara E. Kathleen O., you're next. You're going to be followed by Patty T. Please go ahead, Kathleen.
Good morning, Gina. Thank you for moderating this morning. And good morning, everyone. This is Kathleen O., recovers compulsive overeater in Northern California. So husband number one, difficult to deal with, enjoys drinking. Liquor as a social lubricant. So I'm married to an alcoholic, and thank you God he isn't drinking today. But there was many years where, you know, I could relate to everything in this chapter. And when I think of myself as food as a social lubricant, I realized recently that I do have social anxiety. And when I go places, and I think a lot of people maybe do, because liquor is used as a social lubricant. We can let our guards down. And I was never a drinker. It never appealed to me. But food would serve that same purpose. It would bring that ease and comfort to me. That social lubricant is another way of saying, bringing the ease and comfort so you can function. And so this is telling us what works. Patience. Don't tell him what to do about his drinking, or he will drink more. And again, I can relate to that on both sides, because when my husband was drinking, and I would get impatient. And I would try to tell him what to do, and it didn't work. Of course, it didn't work any more than it did when I was in the food. And, you know, people are usually a little kinder about the food because I don't know, they just are. I mean, I would have loved ones say, you know, why don't you try this? Or, you know, friends, why don't you try, or how about? And it didn't help because I wasn't ready. I had to be ready. And when people would say that, it would stress me out and I would eat more. And I love this sentence, he may seek someone else to console him, not always another man. Well, yeah, isn't that the story of anyone who's lived with an alcoholic? And, you know, they say that earlier in the pages, how sometimes they, you know, another woman's going to understand them because their wife doesn't. And it's telling us to have reasonableness. Don't be critical, be helpful. And, you know, for me, that's the way to do it. You know, it doesn't help to be critical. And to the wives who are reading this as, you know, someone who, you know, with the alcoholism, this is easier said than done. But because I don't know that I could have done all this being on the other side of, not my food side, but the other side of living with an alcoholic, if I hadn't done these 12 steps. So, you know, acceptance is the answer to all our problems. And I can change me, but I can't change other people. And I have to say that, you know, there's a question on page 86 when we retire at night.
Fine.
Where we can, oh, okay, well, I will stop and thank you. I pass.
Bring that thought in another meeting. Okay, Patty T., you'll be up next, followed by Jana M. And if you are just coming on the line, and I show there's just under 140 of us right now, we are on page 110, second paragraph, which begins, let's go back to husband number one. We're reading through five paragraphs, ending with, you want to be helpful rather than critical. We're going to comment on all. So after Jana, I will take a new grouping. Patty, please go ahead.
Hi, you guys. This is Patty T. Recovered from Southern California. Gosh, it's so great to hear these shares this morning. You know, what I'm struck by is these paragraphs remind me of what my recovered life should look like. Do you know what I mean? I am my own qualifier, okay? I am not married. I don't have children. I live alone with four dogs. And so if this chapter were written to the people I'm around, it would be to Patty's dogs. And coworkers, right? And as I look at this, I realize, oh, these are all instructions for me as a recovered woman in program to live by. You know, patience and good temper. I was just writing about that this morning. Patience and good temper are most necessary. But the thing that strikes me the most here is the sentence that says, do not set your heart on reforming your husband. You may be unable to do so no matter how hard you try. That was my story during the 6 years of my relapse. I was chasing abstinence. I was chasing weight loss. I was chasing reform. Okay, so hard that God wasn't in the picture. There was no connection to other people. It was all me, me, me. I had to do this. I was the codependent to myself. I had to do this or else, right? And, you know, when we hear, you know, that we have to put the food down, and then work the steps. We have to do it that way. That's the way it has to be done. Because otherwise, I can't find the clarity. I can't see myself when I'm in the food. I can't hear you when I'm chewing. So I'm just struck today that, you know, if my will is my thinking and my life is my actions, then I just need to turn all that over to God and allow God to reform me in his gentle, patient, loving way. Because that's the kind of God I have today. Anyway, I'm done. I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Patty. Jana M., you're next. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Can I be heard?
Yes.
Hi, this is Jana M., gratefully recovered in Phoenix, Arizona. And, you know, the first time that I read through this chapter, I really thought that it was ridiculous and didn't apply to me. And I didn't know why it was still left in the fourth edition of the book. And I thought that about, you know, the next couple of chapters, the employers and the family afterwards. Yeah, just to give you a little hint about how big my ego is, because, you know, I still thought that maybe I should have been the one to write the book, or I don't know, something like that, because it didn't speak to me directly. And that was before a fantastic four-year relapse, and I came back to program and got abstinence 6 months ago, and, you know, was really, really, really humbled, have been, you know, really brought to a place where I'm now willing to, you know, look at this chapter, you know, and just try to identify in. I don't have to read it so literally. So while some of it may not, you know, apply directly to me, I have to approach this as, you know, as a way that I can relate to it and identify in. And the first thing is that, you know, it says, oddly enough, he is often difficult to deal with. I was very, very, very difficult to deal with in my disease. I would fly off the handle over, you know, the smallest of things that didn't go my way. And I enjoyed eating. Not only did I enjoy eating, but I enjoyed isolating, and I enjoyed a whole host of things that were not healthy for me and just eroded my confidence and my connection with my family and friends, and just disconnected me from so many vital areas of my life and truly made my life unmanageable, because I enjoyed these things that were not healthy for me. I passed so many evenings in the food. And, you know, the first principle here on 111, I love that it said that you should never be angry. I didn't think I was an angry person until I relapsed this last time. And now I can rage. I found I could rage over anything. It was crazy. And finally, I don't have to be that way anymore now. Patience and good temper with everything are most necessary for me. And yes, I can't, you know, I can't tell anyone what they have to do with themselves. I can only clean up my side of the street. I am reminded of that over and over and over in this program. And the more that I focus in on me and my relationship with my higher power and making my program as strong as it can be, the more relief that I get. Patience has been one of the most important things for me. It is not an overnight matter. And with that, I'll pass.
Thank you so much, Jana M. Okay, we can take a new grouping. If you want to share on what we're reading today, we're on page 110, the second paragraph, reading five paragraphs. Press star one and chime in.
Stephanie N.
Gotcha, Stephanie.
Jody EQ.
Gotcha, Jody.
Leslie W.
Gotcha, Leslie. We've got room for maybe three more if you want to jump on this list. Press star one.
Jennifer H.
Gotcha, Jennifer.
Perry B.
Perry
B.
And Rebecca T. Okay, let's stop there. So here's what we've got. We've got Stephanie N., Jody EQ., Leslie W., Jennifer H., Perry B., and Rebecca T. Stephanie, please go ahead. Stephanie, press star one.
Sorry,
there you go.
Sorry, thank you. This is Stephanie N., recovered in Kansas. And the part that jumped out to me is where he's talking about him and his wife using alcohol as a social lubricant and having a good time. And the thing that's been really amazing to me the last couple years in recovery is that I can go anywhere and have a good time as long as I'm spiritually fit. And I don't have to use anything as a social lubricant anymore. And I can just be, and I could never just be before. And the really amazing thing is that I've been able to be present at events, but I've learned so much about myself. In the disease, I was isolating myself. I had food as this barrier between me and other people. I didn't want to get too close to anyone. Even when I was at these events, I was afraid of rejection. And so I used the food to feel comfortable, feel like I could fit in. And, but it was also a barrier. And I realized that I was isolating myself from myself. I didn't know anything about myself. I was singularly minded about food and weight and exercise, and I had very little substance. I would shift really easily on issues because I was a people pleaser and I wanted to fit in and I wanted people to like me. And since I've been in recovery, I don't do those things anymore. And I can go and I can sit and I can listen and I can have a conversation and not worry about what they think about my opinions. And I've learned so much about myself, and it's just such a gift. So I'm really grateful for that. And but the spiritual fitness is the key. Is the key to being able to go anywhere and not having to use the food. It's staying spiritually fit and close to my higher power. And with that, I pass. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Stephanie. All right, we've got Jody EQ next, followed by Leslie W. Jody, please go ahead.
Thank you, Gina. Good morning, everyone. This is Jody EQ, recovering in California. So I think we need to remember here that this is a chapter written by alcoholics, and we're reading it as members of Overeaters Anonymous. So we are the alcoholic. This is not an Al-Anon meeting. This is an OA meeting. And this is not conference-approved literature for Al-Anon. Just want to put that out there. So this would be have been written to husbands, since I'm the female addict in this case. This would have been written to husbands in my case. And it's hard to imagine for me, my ex-husband, reading this and being serious about following the suggestions. But it's possible that he might have. But as the alcoholic, as the addict, would I have wanted him to do that? Would I have wanted him to never be angry? Yeah, that would have been nice. Would I have wanted him to be patient and good-tempered? Yes, that would have been sweet. Would it have been helpful to me? It probably would have been, I suppose. If he had, or would it have been enabling? I don't know. It's just a question I'm asking myself as I read this. I wanted my husband to join Al-Anon. I asked him to. He didn't want to. If he had, would it have helped me in my recovery? Perhaps. As the alcoholic, as the addict, what is my part in the relationship? What is my part? Most people have some kind of addiction, whether it's alcohol or food or something else. So I can take these suggestions for myself. I can be patient. I can be without anger. I can do all of these things. Patient, good-tempered, compassionate, understanding, loving, and kind if I am in fit spiritual condition. So it's kind of tricky here, all this, the addict, the codependent, when am I one or the other, and how should I be? In each, I'm really both. I'm an addict and I'm a codependent. Anyway, I'm just thinking out loud here. Thank you.
Thank you, Jody EQ. Leslie W., you're next, followed by Jennifer H. Leslie, please go ahead.
Thanks so much for your service this morning. My name is Leslie W., and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater in Tennessee. Do not set your heart on reforming your husband. you may be unable to do so no matter how hard you try. I have to constantly remind myself when I'm reading this chapter that I'm the sick one. sometimes I look at it because I'm the wife and he's the husband. I have to remember, you know, that my husband did try to reform me, and I can also do the same to him, even though he's not an addict. You know, did it work? I have to ask myself, did those tactics, did those things that he tried to do, did it work? Did it work? Did the jokes work? Did the intimidation or the threats work? Did the pleading work? Did the writing on top of the peanut butter jar with a Sharpie, 180 calories per serving, did that work for me in the middle of the night at 3 o'clock in the morning? No, it didn't work. You know, I have to say that this has been a very humbling chapter for me to read, but a very necessary chapter for me to read. Because I need to remember, I need to focus on the fact that I must every day practice tolerance and patience. You know, there is something I can do. You know, I know that other people's stuff is their stuff, right? That the thing that I need to focus on the most is my recovery. I don't need to focus on what they're doing or not doing. But I don't have to be passive about it. You know, I can actively ask my higher power for help to practice patience and tolerance, kindness and love to the people around me. That is something that I can do. You know, I am in charge of myself and my actions. So for me, it just helps to know that, because I don't need to think for myself. I don't need to sit around thinking, oh, there's nothing I can do. No, there is something I can do. I have a responsibility as a recovered person today to be a shining example to those around me of what recovery looks like. And it doesn't look like me telling my husband what to do. That's not what it looks like. And that was my MO before. So I'm so thankful that I don't do that as much anymore. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, Leslie W. Jennifer H., you'll be next, followed by Perry B. Please go ahead, Jennifer.
Hi, this is Jennifer H. in Alabama, a recovered compulsive overeater, and I'm grateful to you guys for your service and sharing this morning. And I'm really, really grateful that we're going through this chapter, and it has been, you know, at least I have the awareness as we're going through it to kind of, you know, sift down through the layers, because, you know, you guys say at the beginning of this meeting that what I'm supposed to share is my experience as a compulsive overeater and recovery, and what this means to me from that point of view. And so it is really hard to not think about, you know, him and everybody else, and, you know, but it has been a really great, you know, growth opportunity in my spiritual growth in this program, because if I didn't know that there was a solution, if you know, if you guys didn't give me a solution right there in the second step, I couldn't have taken the first one. I don't know what would happen. You know, I mean, that would have been too hard to face for me. But luckily, you know, I knew that there would be. So when I look at this chapter, if I were to really face my part and the things that I did that were crazy, you know, in my active overeating and starving myself down to the people around me, you know, it doesn't mean they were right when they tried to, you know, nag or do all these crazy things, which is what happens when I'm an active addict and there are people around me, they're going to be nuts. It's going to affect them. So, for me to face that, it doesn't mean they were right and I was wrong or something like that. It just means these are things that I did and there is a solution and it's a power greater than me and that's what I have to do. The fact that I was, you know, was at fault here doesn't mean that the things they may have said in their craziness because of the disease, that was right. I don't know if this is making sense. So I now that I can focus entirely on my higher power and the way he has removed this and done this for me, I don't have to, you know, give that up and rely on self again. Even if all the people who were suffering because of me were, even if they were saying that or something. So anyway, I'm really grateful we're looking through this chapter because it's a huge thing for me in trying to look just at my part. So I'm grateful to you guys for being here and I'll pass.
Thank you, Jennifer H. Okay, Perry B., you're next, followed by Rebecca T., and we've just got time for two shares, so I'm going to give you each 2 minutes. Please go ahead,
okay.
Perry.
Hi, this is Perry B. I'm a compulsive overeater and an active addict, and I'm in recovery today, one day at a time. Grateful for the meeting, grateful for the people on the meeting, grateful for my higher power, grateful for my holiday that I had yesterday that I got to pray and that I ended up overeating at. And at first, it was just one little plate. And then I was like, there's so much food. It's free. Then came the second plate. And I noticed I chose a space where I thought nobody was going to be, like an isolated little area. These were not unabstinent foods, but they were foods that I knew that I was eating too much of. And then my friend, who's an active overeater that I called, came and said, look, there's a lunch. Let's go in there, too. And we didn't pay for it, but they'll never know. And I felt like a thief, like here I'm stealing somebody else's food that I didn't pay for. And I don't like the feeling of feeling like a thief. I don't like stealing other people's food. I don't even like eating my husband's food that I know he purposely bought for him. And I don't like being an enabler. But just for today, I'm going to ask God for the strength to be patient with myself and with my active compulsive eating friends and relatives. And I'm going to just look at, number one, myself. I'm going to be motivated to, you know, read my 12-step book, call my 3 people a day, write in my journal, call my sponsor, weigh and measure. Do all those things that are disciplines. And I went to bed at 9:30 last night, and a friend of mine did that one night, and I was like, why is she going to bed so early? And she goes, that's what I have to do when I'm in recovery. And I was so proud of her, and I feel so good today to share that I did that because she was such a good inspiration to me. And we've been buddies, and using the phone right now for both of us has been a real big savings because going to a meeting sometimes is difficult. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Perry B. Okay, Rebecca T, you're going to be our final share today, Rebecca. I've got you for 2 minutes. Please go ahead.
Hey, everyone. It's Rebecca T from Central California. So grateful to be here. So I love you guys. I love your shares. I'm feeling vulnerable right now, and it's okay because you guys are all here, and I'm not alone. And I feel very grateful that you know, everyone's open and honest shares, and just being raw and honest. And you know, I wasn't that way for a very long time, and yet I thought I was such a trustworthy person. I think I was in a lot of you know, aspects, but definitely there was the other hidden world that nobody knew about. And thankfully for today, And in my recovery, I'm working on those things, and things are being revealed. And specifically to our what we're talking about right now, I'm thinking I hear two words, and the first one is, what is my part? And then the second one is, I just lost it. The second one was, oh, did it help? Did it help? I love that. So I'm going to read this entire chapter again, because there's so many things that are calling to me. So many things I need to point the finger more back at me, go back and do some work, some hard work, but some loving work and some kind work, and not bashing work. So my word for this week is tolerance. I really need to work on that, because as I can show tolerance for others and show love for their mistakes and their errors and blah, 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 I can also show that the same thing for myself. And I need that to be equal. Thank you so much. Bye.
Thank you, Rebecca T. You will be our last share for today. We will now close the reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Will Carrie S. please read A Vision for You? Our book is meant to be suggestive only.
Bless you, Gina, for your service this morning. This is Carrie S., recovered in Colorado. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. So see to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is a great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.